This podcast is sponsored by Sylphie Reaptress. Have you ever thought about taking the plunge and getting a suit rather than just, you know, old clothes and stuff like that? A suit, man, that's where it's at. You go through a crawlway in a suit. You don't have to worry about pants getting pulled down or shirts getting pulled up or anything like that. It's a one-piece thing, and the way she makes them, man, they're not going to come apart on you. They're not going to wear down as easily because she puts the thicker fabric in right where you need it, right in the elbows and the knees. 500 denier cordura throughout the entire thing, twice as thick where you need it, butts, knees, elbows, and she'll put extra pockets in certain places if you want them. She'll put pockets where the knee pads should be so you can just slip the pads right in there. She'll put a bat stencil wherever you want it. My wife just ordered one, and she wants a bat stencil right there on the shoulder. My wife liked the standard olive green, and you can see Sophie herself modeling the olive green cave suit at her website, sophiereaptress.com. And I'll link you to that in the episode description of this podcast as well. So yeah, a cave suit from Sophie is custom made for you. If you're a serious caver, you need a serious suit, and Sophie will make you one. sophiereaptress.com. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm Matt Pelzer, your host. I'm from the Central Indiana Grotto. A grotto is it's like a caving club. It's what we call it in the United States. We are a local chapter of the National Speleological Society, and we are organized because caving is one of those things where, you know, if you're in the community, then chances are you've done it a few times and you know how to do it right. If you're not in the community, you might not be aware of the safety protocols that we all like to follow. I would say that's one of the main reasons we are organized, because caving's like a lot of things. It can be dangerous if you're just getting started. If you've been doing it a while, or if you surround yourself with people who have done it a lot, then quite the opposite is the case. So if you're interested in caving, then find your local grotto. And you don't have to join right away. You can just make friends, because we're friendly people. And you can do that at the NSS website, caves.org. And I've got a link in the episode description to help you find your local grotto there, too. Other links in the description. Sarah Cave Carnival, May 4th through the 7th. I'll be there, hopefully going on some trips and hopefully doing some interviews, too. You can pre-register at the link. It was either the last episode or the one before that. I don't know. Talked about how I hadn't paid my dues for my own grotto, the Central Indiana Grotto, last year and for this year. And so I just made that right and prepaid for the next 6 years. And I just now got a message back from the chairman, Jasper, and he thanked me for that. So if you are behind on dues, this is just your reminder to pay up, either with your local grotto or with the NSS. And thank you. And I think I told you last month, Jasper asked me to host the banquet for Indiana Cave Capers, first weekend in August in Indiana, and I'll be doing that. But I've been doing that for the last several years, with the exception of 2019 and 2020. But very honored to be doing that. And I'd love to see you at Indiana Cave Capers this year. You can just Google Indiana Cave Capers and you'll find it. I don't know if they've got pre-registration up or not, but it's always a good time. This month, Kevin Mulligan, speaking of capers, he was out of capers last year with the Gauntlet. We talk a lot about the Gauntlet. What's the Gauntlet? It's a ropes course. It can be a competitive ropes course. It can just be a training ropes course, but it's awesome. It's all kinds of stuff. We'll get into it. But Kevin was a delight to talk to. I do have to let you know, though, before we get into this, that and we get into this at like the very end of the talk, so I should probably let you know now what's up. He has like an aviation headset that he uses for this interview. So if it sounds like he's in a helicopter, that's why. But I thought it was kind of cool. Kevin was a delight to talk with. We talk about the Gauntlet. We talk about his exploration. We talk about him being involved with Caving Academy, too. And I just really appreciated Kevin's time. Here is me and Kevin Mulligan. So wait a second. I just got back from Winter Adventure Weekend. You helped develop the corrugated cave, the cardboard cave?
I've helped with it in the past.
Okay.
I was not helping this year.
Oh, okay. You were
many moons ago.
Okay, but okay. So, what can you tell me about that then?
I'm assuming you've seen it.
I mean, I stepped in, but there were a bunch of people like waiting to go through it, and I like kind of just stepped right back out, and I didn't. I didn't end up going back. So, no, I didn't get to see it. I'm very, very disappointed that I didn't get to look in there.
Is it still doing it in the basement?
Yeah. Yeah, right underneath that meeting hall.
The basement of their little center there at the Carter Cave State Park. And basically just fill this whole room with corrugated pipes and cardboard passages, and you make a cool little man-made cave. It's awesome.
I wish I could have seen it, because it seems
You don't got to see it. You got to go do it.
I know I got to go do it.
Get your headlamp on and go on in.
Speaking of headlamps, your grotto does a carbide trip every year?
We do. We started doing that a couple of years ago. We had the great idea, like, oh, those carbide lamps. Remember we used to use those things like 20 years ago? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. All the old timers are like, yeah, I still got mine. And so I was like, can we use them again? And I was like, well, I don't know. Do they still work? I'm like, well, they don't go bad. So, like, one time we're hanging out and everyone brought, like, all their carbide lamps. We had, like, 20 or 30 of them on the table trying to get them to work. And we got a bunch to work, and we decided to go do a little cave trip with them. And we had an awesome time, and we do it every year since.
That's really cool. I've never done one. I've never used carbide.
It's carbide only. So, like, we're not even allowed to bring backup electric.
Not even for safety?
That's what you got your friends for.
Not even just in case?
Carbide goes out, you do a little carbide kiss, you know?
All right. Interesting. Cool. I mean, I don't know. I can't even fathom having, like, being in a tight passage and having a flame in front of your face. You know,
we do a little easy trip, mostly walking little things.
But even then, like, okay, so that's for fun. But I just, you know, I can't. I try to imagine the explorers, you know, in Virgin Cave and in really, really challenging passages, maybe sometimes with water, with nothing but carbide.
Yeah, you know? It's crazy stuff. They used to do that, you know.
It is.
The OGs of caving.
So you've done an awful lot. How long have you been caving?
I started in 2002.
Okay, so more than 20 years, but you were pretty young at that time, right?
You're really making me sound old.
Yeah, but you were pretty young at that time, so you're not... I'm older than you, man.
I know. Yeah, I started as a kid, so I guess I got a one up there.
Well, that's cool. So the bug bit you pretty early.
Yeah, Boy Scouts got me in, believe it or not.
New Jersey?
Yeah, New Jersey. I grew up in New Jersey. I was in a Boy Scout troop, and one of my scout leaders, Carl Heitmeyer, he was a big caver. And he's like, oh, well, I know what the Boy Scouts need. Now that my son's in the Boy Scout troop, well, we're going to go on a cave trip. And so we went caving, and I was hooked.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, you got a 14-year-old little kid. You know, I probably weighed 100 pounds wet. You know, I can fit through these little holes. And it was like a big jungle gym. It was great.
That's a comparison that I hear often. It's like an adult jungle gym where you can get dirty and you got to bring light. You know, that's what it is. I mean, who wouldn't like to do that? Whoever can handle it mentally, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how when we're kids, we can handle a lot more mentally than when we're adults? Like, kids typically, to me, can handle caving a lot better than most adults.
Oh, well, kids are indestructible. Come on, they just bounce right back.
They can't. They don't have the experience to let them worry about too many things the way we can, the way we manage to as adults.
Yeah, and now that I'm older, it's like, oh, if I fall down this little thing, like, that could be bad. I'm not going to rebound like I did when I was 14.
Whiteside, you been to Whiteside in preparation for Bridge Day?
Yeah, Whiteside. I love Whiteside. That's an awesome little cliff. You've been there before?
No, I've been invited many times, just like I've been invited to Bridge Day many times. I got to do it.
Yeah, my old grotto made it like a requirement to do as prep work to go on the Bridge Day trip.
Yeah, that's kind of it's prep work for a lot of people. A lot of people go out there for that.
It's good to do. It's out in the open. You know, you can see everything going on, and it's one hell of a good drop.
Okay, so then you leave New Jersey where there are no caves to go where the caves are. Where'd you go?
Oh, Kentucky. There might be a couple caves.
There's a few caves down there.
Yeah. Kentucky, things really exploded there. There's actually caves. Cool. You know, I lived in Jersey. You know, we used to go out to Pennsylvania, New York, do, you know, a bunch of little caves, and they were cool and all. But Kentucky, you got some serious borehole there.
So, I don't know. What can you put your name on as far as finding things?
I didn't find nothing. I was just going along with everybody else.
You were just going. Okay. No, not so much exploration, but definitely a lot of caving.
I joined the local caving club at university. I joined a couple of grottos and just kind of putted around a little bit. Oh, we're doing this over here, doing this over there. Oh, okay. I don't know. I'm all new to this. So I just kind of went where they told me to go. And, you know, a lot of Carter County stuff, Rockcastle County.
Oh, Rockcastle County. Some good caves there.
Oh, yeah. Oof. Goochland and Sloan's Valley.
And some professional caving, as I understand it. Some Mammoth Cave type stuff?
Kind of. I never worked with the CRF. I did a lot of stuff with Mammoth Cave Restoration Camp. You heard of them?
Yeah, a little bit, but can you tell me more about it? Because I just, you know, it's just been kind of dropped a few times, and I've never really got into what exactly goes on there.
So Mammoth Cave Restoration Camp is a group of volunteers that basically work hand-in-hand with the National Park Service. And they do a lot of caving stuff that the National Park Service really isn't really geared for. They could really use caver help on stuff like that. Just extra hands doing stuff like removing old lighting cable, removing old stairs and docks that were down at the Echo River down there, clearing out springs, trying to get the water levels back to historic levels. Oh, this last year we were clearing out, it was a kind of a water cistern set up in a cave, and we were supposed to take it apart and bring it out of the cave. It was a pit entrance kind of thing. You can walk down into it, but they were saying, no, it's going to take us like 3 years to get all this stuff. It was several thousand pounds of wood, and one thing we pulled out was a 1,500-gallon water tank. And we were looking at it. I was down there with Kelly McDermott and Ben Urbanski, who are also on the gauntlet stuff.
Yeah.
And we're looking at it, and we're looking at this, and they're like, oh, we got some ropes and stuff. Give us about 2 hours, and we're going to rig something cool for you guys. And they're like, okay, we're going to start dismantling stuff. So we started working and rigging ropes. We ended up doing a big traverse line across the pit with the Inglis Reeves haul system, with all kinds of crazy redirects and stuff, and we're able to pull all that equipment and old refuse that had to come out of the cave horizontally, vertically up to the pit, and then horizontally across the traverse line, and then down into a landing zone, all with the same haul system. It saved. It took about 3 years of work down to about 2 days, and we got it done.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
The guy that runs that, Brian Huntsacker, he comes to me, he goes, Kevin, I'm really mad at you. I'm like, what's up, Brian? He goes, you really screwed me over on the next couple of trips for us, because now we have to find other work to do.
I thought you were going to say you really screwed me over for the next 2 years, because I had everything planned out, all these trips.
I ruined it for him. I'm sorry, Brian. good stuff like that with ropes, it sometimes helps.
Well, yeah, I mean, okay, so you name dropped Kelly McDermott, who I also saw at Winter Adventure Weekend, and she took me on a trip to Roppel. Have you been to Roppel?
Yep, been to Roppel before.
Yeah. What'd you do there? Just see a bunch of it or what?
We used to go to Roppel for Mammoth Cave Restoration Camp stuff. It was like, you did all this work. Let's go do a little recreation trip. Let's go to Roppel. So
yeah.
That's how I got into Roppel.
So how far did you get in Roppel?
I don't know. Not very far. We just went and saw some cool, pretty stuff.
Yeah. I really enjoyed my two Roppel trips at Spelio Fest a couple years ago, especially the Kelly trip. Cause we went farther than she had planned. And, cause we were in kind of a big group. And when I saw our group, I was like, oh man, I don't think we're going to get to do as much as she wanted, but everybody was really fast and awesome. And we got to our objective, and she was like, we got all kinds of time. You want to keep going? And we did, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. Kelly's a good caver.
Yeah, she's a solid caver.
But yeah, I'm a project caver now, so if anyone wants to needs an extra hand in Roppel, give me a call.
Well, okay, so you dropped the gauntlet. This is most of the reason I think we're talking today is you helped develop this sort of training course, and you call it the gauntlet. You were out at Indiana Cave Capers, right? You were at Capers?
Yep, we were
there. Because I saw Kelly there, and a bunch of people ran the gauntlet, as it were. Tell me about how this started and what it is and, you know, how it's developed.
The gauntlet. Oof. Let's reverse a few years.
Okay.
So I got involved with some SRT caving stuff, you know, when I got to Kentucky. got to get into more caves. What's the cool cave stuff down there? Well, you got to get on rope to get to the cool stuff. So I learned all the rope stuff. But I got a good teaching from a lot of good cavers. So I knew my stuff. And I started doing other things with my SRT stuff.
I'm curious. I know you did the expedition with the folks from France and some other stuff.
That's kind of how it. The gauntlet wouldn't have started unless I found out that I didn't actually know what I was doing. So I guess I did a lot of caving in Kentucky and stuff. All that other caving things. It was just, you know, everyone caves and everyone has a good time. There's a bunch of good stories in there, but we're going to try to get to the gauntlet stuff. 2017 was my first caving expedition internationally. It was a French caving trip. And like I said, I thought I knew what I was doing when I went out there. Oh, I learned all kind of American caving. I can do all this stuff. And I get there. And it was a little different than I thought. I was never exposed to international European style caving. And this was a French trip, so that's what they did.
I'm curious about this. How did you get hooked up with them?
One of my caver buddies from Kentucky in my grotto just sent a thing out. He goes, oh, these Kyrgyzstan cavers are looking for help on this trip. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. Da, 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 da. I've never done a trip like this. There's the French that are working it. Maybe they'll let me go. So I emailed somebody, and they were like, yeah, you know what you're doing? I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And they're like, oh, come on out. Da, 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 da. So that's how I got down. I just an email, really. some trips, like, you just get on, and people are like, yeah, if you're a caver, like, we'll put you to work.
Right on. And so they did.
It wasn't like heavy or something, you know, where you got to, like, get interviewed and all kinds of other procedures to get on. Could be wrong. I've never been to Chevy, so I just stories I heard. So
right. So you get in with them, and you discover that their protocols are a little different, maybe a little more strict.
Yeah, that was the feeling I was getting, and I could probably use some more training after caving with them. And that's kind of what I did. They really knew what they were doing. They taught me a lot of cool stuff. I came back with a new sense of. There's more to learn about SRT, so let me kind of dive into it and learn some more.
Okay, before we get to that, I'm very curious about the area where you were doing some of this work. You said Kyrgyzstan, and, you know, that jumped out at me. And then you know, as you and I were kind of discussing this talk before we got to it, you said, yeah, we were working in the same area where Tommy Caldwell was kidnapped.
Oh, yeah, the Tommy Caldwell incident.
Yeah.
That was 2000, I think it was, right?
Yeah, 2000. He was kidnapped by militants, and he ended up pushing the guy off the cliff.
Yeah. We were in the valley right next to kind of where the area that he was involved in. Really cool little desert, kind of high altitude kind of area. The cave there, we were surveying basically. We did about 7 miles of survey in that cave for that 2 weeks' time. And the valley was amazing. We camped at this little oasis. It was an apricot orchard. So it was the only thing in the valley that had water because it had a spring right there. And that's what they used for the irrigation. I guess it was cave water. And it was a beautiful place. People were so good out there, the locals and stuff. We ate really good. The sunsets and sunrises were unbelievable. Stars. Do you know where Kyrgyzstan is? It's in the middle of nowhere in Central Asia.
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing around for miles. And the stars at night, there's no sun pollution out there. It's probably the best stars I've ever seen, Milky Way and all that jazz.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful place. I can see, you know, the climbers love that area. You know, the Karachuk Valley is, they call it, what do they call it? The Yosemite of Asia or something like that.
That's cool.
Never got to do any climbing down there. It was on my list, but... caving comes first.
So it's a lot of limestone down there too, then, as opposed to Yosemite Valley, which is granite.
I guess it probably depends on what elevation you're at.
Okay.
You know, the rock changes. The cave we were in was half mine, half cave. So way back in the Soviet times, they had mining gulags there.
Oh.
And I guess they were forcing people to mine for the Russians. This is back in like the 30s and stuff. They would mine into this hillside, and they kept breaking into caves. So you'd survey a little bit, then you'd be in like a mine shaft, and then you'd be back in the cave, and yada yada yada. So it was really cool. Like around camp, like there'd be all these old stone buildings that were the old gulag stuff. So that was really neat.
So you get this crash course in European, I don't know if you'd say alpine caving SRT techniques or what, but
we'll call it alpine caving.
Yeah. So. What was the, I don't want to say culture shock, because it's not really about the culture, but in a way, it's about the caving culture. What What was that like?
It was definitely a shock. We definitely cave a lot differently here in the United States for the most part. I thought it was the way to do it. Not necessarily that one way is better than the other, but I did get exposed to a different way that I never knew about, and that kind of got my curiosity ticking to learn more about it.
And so then that was kind of the germ for the gauntlet.
Yeah, I'd say that trip was probably what got me started thinking about more SRT stuff. I came back. I knew I wanted to learn more. I did a little bit things here and there with the grottos. I went back to Kyrgyzstan in 2019 again to do more caving stuff, looking for more international kind of SRT stuff. That trip was cool too. We went on a different part. The last trip in 2017 was on the Tajikistan border down the south. This time we were up in the pretty much east of the country on the Chinese border, and we were ridge walking on that trip. We were there with Thomas Hawkins, of all people.
Oh yeah, yeah. Did you have to pull him away from the plants?
Oh my God, him and his plants. Let me tell you, Thomas,
that's great though. I love that.
Well, we're out there hiking around. He's got his butt in his air, down his hands and knees, looking at this plant. He's like, gosh, check this out. It's a so and so plant. I'm like, I don't know anything about plants, but look at for caves, Thomas. Come on.
I love having people like that around though, because I have a curiosity about those things. It's kind of just like barely an interest, you know, but if you're around someone like him who has this passion for it, you know, and he can tell you about these things and why this matters and why it's cool that this is here and all these things, that gets me going. So yeah, that was cool. But I could see how if you've got an objective and you've got somebody who keeps kind of being distracted by things, how that might be a little frustrating.
Nah, it's fine. I'm not really, you know, all big on the plant stuff, but the stuff he talks about, you know, especially with all the Mexico cloud forest stuff, is fascinating.
Oh, really, he's gotten to do some amazing things.
So, oh yeah, yeah. His wife, I don't know how his wife tolerates it.
Well, she's into it too, as I understand, but.
Oh, sort of. She has a love and hate relationship with me. Every time like Thomas goes out with me, I always end up getting him hurt or almost killed.
Oh no.
The Kyrgyzstan trip, he got hurt on.
Oh yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he was out doing some hiking around, ridge walking, and he fell down this slope, and he grabbed on some cactus that saved him from falling over this like 300-meter cliff.
Oh my God!
Yeah, wild stuff. And he'd broken his at least his foot, maybe some other stuff. I was across the valley, like 6 hours away, doing a lead climb trying to get to this cave entrance, and I had radio contact with his team. They were like, well, I can't really get to you right now. Base camp can get to you. Base camp is 40 minutes out from their check-in time. We had a thing where base camp would check up on us every 2 hours and stuff, make sure we're okay. And they would have the radio off or they weren't at the radio. So we had to wait for like a little longer for them to check in. Once they got checked in, bring up so-and-so. We'll get Thomas is hurt. We got to get him out. So they got him down. We gave him some really good drugs and a SAM splint and sent him off to the doctor the next day, local, the biggest local like town that had a hospital. It was like 6 hour drive away or something. And he got x-rayed and it was broken. The doctor, he sent another caver and the driver out, I think, into town to go find ingredients to make a plaster Paris cast that they didn't have in the little hospital clinic.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crazy. They casted Thomas up and the next day he got on a taxi. Went out to Bishkek to get an early flight home. And yeah, it was broken and he needed rehab and stuff. And poor Thomas.
Yeah, but he's all right now. I went caving with him back in August and he was a delight. Awesome. That was wonderful.
Yeah, Thomas is always good to cave with.
And then I guess shortly after that, you were doing this climb and fell into a crack?
Oh, yeah, yes, later on in the trip. We tried finding caves by walking. We tried finding caves by hiking. And tried to find caves by horseback. We found some caves. It was cool stuff. But then eventually, a few cavers, friends of I, we went to take a week-long mountaineering class up in the Tian Shan Mountains. And we were ice climbing this one day. It's a storm. We really shouldn't have been on there that day. It was hard to hear each other. It's kind of scary. You know, you're doing these multi-pitch climbs on ice, and you can't see or hear your climbers. Yeah. Oops. But I was rappelling. We finally bailed on it, and we're rappelling down the last pitch. And we dropped a Prusik before, and it was sitting on the snow at the bottom of this ice wall, where the ice wall meets the glacier. And I go down to pick it up. I would take a step over on top of the snow, and myself, the snow, and the Prusik fall into a crevasse.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, I'm still on rope.
Yeah, but that's terrifying.
Oh, I definitely pee my pants a little bit. I'm not going to be ashamed to admit that. But, I was like, I didn't care how deep that thing was. I wasn't going to look. I was just like, I'm on rope. I'm safe. Let me just get out of here. And I got out of there. Didn't get the Prusik. I waited for everyone else to come down and say, don't step anywhere over here. There's a hole. Yeah, good times.
Wow. So the gauntlet then.
The gauntlet. So came back from all that stuff. I was kind of like on a search to learn more SRT stuff. There really wasn't a lot of resources here to learn that stuff. You know, we have the NSS doing stuff with the VS, the vertical section, and the NCRC does some stuff, but it's not really geared towards that European, international kind of way you would cave. I did my own research. I had some other cavers that could help me out with some stuff, and we started doing grotto practices in my mom's backyard, rigging trees and stuff. Over the years, it got progressively more ornate, I can say. Thomas Hawkins would come over and help out. We had another caver, Polish caver, Jarema Uzyblo. He knew some stuff, and we rigged all kinds of crazy things for people to like practice on. It started out like, okay, this is, we're going to do a replay here, and did this, and then eventually, well, let's tie all this stuff together. And it's like, oh, you'd be really cool. We made like a course out of all these obstacles. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do that. And it turned into like a course now. So we had a little ropes course in the backyard. And we didn't call it the gauntlet, but it was just something we set up every time we did a big grotto practice.
When I saw it set up at Capers, I thought this is something that started somewhere and then progressed. Like, I thought this wasn't like this from day one. This was, okay, we'll add this. We'll do this. We'll put a culvert and we'll run water through it and everything. Make it like a cave environment.
Well, sometimes you do obstacles and there's a waterfall.
Yeah.
Who hasn't been in a water before in a cave?
I saw that and I thought, oh my gosh, they're turning on the hose. That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah. We started doing that too. I kind of got the idea from spar classes. I was in one of Eddie Cartero's spar classes out in Oregon one time. And we were doing pickoff practices in the culvert pipes. And it's like, oh, you can do it in the culvert pipe really tight and dark. Like, yeah, I can handle anything with the pickoff now. So can you handle it in water? And I was like, let's find out. So he turns the hoses on. We start doing pickoff practices in the water. And that definitely changes things. You can't hear anything. You can't see anything. Things are getting really, like, sketchy now. It was sketchy before, but you turn that water on, it's like you're in a whole other place. It's cold water, too, of course. So
yeah.
You're shivering the whole time. And it came down to, if you can do a pickoff in a tight, confined space in a waterfall, you could probably do it anywhere. And I think the thing I took away from that is, if there is a place where you're trying to do a pickoff in a waterfall in real life, you probably shouldn't attempt it. It's not safe.
Right.
Yeah. That started. It's like, oh, we can do our own little obstacle waterfalls here, and it'll definitely spice things up a little bit.
Well, I definitely appreciated seeing it at Capers, and I, you know, as I saw people on it and things, I thought, how long did it take to set up? So when did you get there? When would you say it was set up? And when, I guess, did you have the first person on?
If you're going to take example for Cave Capers, we showed up the day prior. So I guess started on a Friday. We showed up Thursday morning. We might have been. Okay, so we started setting up Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. We spent all day working on it. The next morning, Friday, we had a bunch of other little things to set up. But we were probably ready by dinner time Friday. So I'd say about a day and a half of work.
Sounds about
right. For four people.
That's pretty, for four people, I'd say that's pretty fast. There was a lot.
Capers was six people. But we got it down to a science. The first time took us a lot longer, and it was not as refined, I guess you'd call it. Every time we do an event, it gets better and better.
Well, yeah, sure. And how many would you say you've done? I mean, you might not have an exact number, but how often do you get it out?
I think last year we did, I'm going to say, four mobile events. We did MAR, we did VAR, we did TAG, and we did cave capers.
What's the interest like? I mean, do a lot of people, do you keep a line? A lot of people wanting to get on?
For the most part, like if you're for a weekend event, there's always people in there at some point. It varies depending on what time of the day it is, depending on who's in line.
Sure.
We try to not have lines, but sometimes people come back from cave trips and they all want to get in there. So pretty good.
And it's something where you don't have to do all of it, right? You can just do like this part or that part.
Yeah. So we started it out, you know, the gauntlet, it's not a training thing. We set it up. Okay. This is a course. Let's bring it to events and give people a challenge to do. There's always like little competitions and stuff at cave events. So let's do a cool epic ropes course thing. Usually people will do rope stuff at one of these cave events. It's just a, you know, a single rope in a tree and you climb up and down as fast as you can. It wasn't really like big obstacle stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So we wanted to include that in some of these events.
I mean, it probably takes a while to break down too, I would imagine. Maybe not as long, but.
Oh yeah. It's a long time to set up, long time to take down. We're getting, obviously, you know, we're getting better at it. The gauntlet started as a competition thing. We were never really teaching people stuff. So we would just go there, set up a course, let people run through it. As time goes on, though, we noticed that a lot of people just didn't know how to do some of these obstacles, which kind of makes sense. It took me a long time to learn this stuff. And a lot of people didn't know, not the very proper procedures, but really any procedures on how to get through this stuff. It was like, this is really hard. Like, we're never going to make it through the whole course. So at some point, you notice at a cave capers, we divided the gauntlet into two sections. You came in to the gauntlet. You had the ropes course on one side, kind of, and in another separate area, we have a practice area where you can go and learn how to do the actual each individual obstacle. So you go in there, and we have a rebelay set up, a deviation, a guided rappel, a J-hang, all that stuff that you can try close to the ground in a safe environment, people to watch you to see, to basically practice and or get a couple like little tips on how to do some of the stuff before you get let loose in the course. That's how I was at Cave Capers.
So not so much competition, or did you do a little bit?
Oh, we always do competition. We have a little leaderboard set up. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, you do it, you get your time. We only do actual board times for people who choose to do it with all the water features on. So that's fun. Can't let them off that easy.
No, no. Where are you going next with it?
Where are we going next? We are going Mar, Pennsylvania.
Okay. When is that?
Mar is going to be May 5th through the 7th.
Oh, okay. Same weekend as
Sarah.
Sarah. Yeah. Gotcha. All right.
Well, Mar asked us to go there first, so we give them, you know, we're going there.
The Caving Academy. You did that stuff with out in Hungary?
Yeah. We did Hungary back in 2021. It was actually this past summer. Wait, no, it's 2022. What year is 2023, right? Jeez, time flies. COVID.
What is time? What is it? We're 3 years since the world changed. It's crazy.
Yeah, those like 2 or 3 years, that didn't happen. Yeah. Last summer we did the first inaugural Caving Academy class. I went in there as an instructor to be taking that class to kind of get a feel for what the Hungarians do. And they nailed it. They did an awesome job in Hungary. Everyone had a great time. We had people come from all over the place. And it was basically meant for like Americans, because the international caving world has this kind of view on Americans as, you know, oh, they're a bunch of cowboys. They just go in there and throw their giant pit rope down. They just do it, and blah, 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 blah. They don't have any regulations. They're blah, 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 blah. I was like, all right, that's they're not technically wrong. But insult all aside, they taught us some cool things that we didn't know, and you know how the rest of the world kind of does things. And I think that was the point, kind of getting us exposed to that stuff, and really showing us like really, really good ornate technical rigging.
I thought it was really, really, really cool. I mean, I had Mark Dickey on, and it was just really impressive. You know, he's thinking of everything, and getting the advice from, you know, the international community and things. And I don't know, you wrote a cool comparison between IRT and Alpine. Can you kind of just go through like this comparison of the cowboy Americans versus what the Europeans, for the most part, do?
Oh, those cowboys. that is us. That's how the world kind of sees us. You know?
Yeah, well, it's fine, I guess.
But yeah, basically, what we're used to in America, we see a pit, all right? It's on the surface. We're going to throw a rope pad. We're going to take our 11-millimeter pit rope, and we're going to toss it down and hope for the best. If it touches rock, it's like, whatever. Our rope, 11-mil pit rope, has such an armored sheath on it. You really can't hurt this stuff.
Yeah.
It's heavy. It's stiff. It's very hard to tie knots in, but it's very good for abrasion resistance. And we use it, and it's fantastic stuff for IRT. But there's another way to do things. You got the alpine side of things. When you're alpine rigging, you are rigging in a way where you are avoiding things like rope rub. You're also making it a more efficient way to travel on rope. So, for example, if you have a proper alpine rig cave, you're never going to have to fight a lip or an edge problem. Usually, if it's rigged right, you're going to be able to easily step off the rope. You're never going to have to just sludge through mud, you know, fight your ascenders over a lip and stuff like that.
What would you mean by rigged right? Just like bolted into the wall and so that it's hanging so that it's not rubbing?
I'm not saying IRT is wrong and stuff. You know,
sure.
Proper,
yeah, but
alpine, because there could be improper alpine rigging, obviously.
Of course.
But proper alpine rigging would be where there would be, you know, no rope rub, and rigged in a way where you are traversing with the most efficiency possible. So you're using less energy.
Okay. That makes sense.
You have to fight over a lip. You're using energy and you're wasting it.
You're working smarter, not harder.
Exactly. Now, to do some of that stuff, you have to do more bolting, usually, and other kinds of fancy stuff that, you know, you might not necessarily have time for if you're, you know, doing this or that, but it is an option.
See, I think, and, you know, not to overly defend the American way of doing things, it's like, it seems like we're able to, with our, you might say, sloppier ways of doing things, able to get at it a little quicker rather than getting to a place where there is a vertical element and just, you know, sitting there and waiting while someone properly rigs it and things like that. I'm not saying one is better than the other, but
we can go both ways in America. Like it really depends on what the cave is and what we want to do with the cave. It depends on like how we would rig stuff.
Yeah.
There's so many variables. It really comes up to what the rigger wants to do. And yeah, you know, there's good things to say, be said about both ways.
So you put these new things into practice. And
yeah, I'd like everyone to know all the ways to do things. You know, more knowledge, power, right?
Well, you just got back from Mexico, right?
Oh, we did just get back from Mexico.
Yeah. And you,
I was down to Mexico with Tony Akers.
Yeah.
Mike Grazer. Yeah. They brought us down to some cool caving stuff.
Yeah. I saw Sierra Mazateca and
your eyes lit up probably.
In the notes. Yeah, well, I mean, our grotto has in the past, I don't know when the last time we did it was, but we have sort of helped to fund those expeditions, or at the very least fund the school supply program that they do to help the locals down there when they go, you know, sort of a goodwill campaign.
Yeah, Indiana has a lot of history down there in the Sierra.
I mean, and Tony's just done so much down there. And
he basically lives there. He knows all the ins and outs.
I know, which is so cool, you know. And he's going to be, I've talked to him before. He's been on the podcast for a short little segment before, but I've been talking to him lately. He said, yeah, I'll come on at the end of the, you know, later this year. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah, he can talk for hours.
Oh, I know he can. And the thing about talking to somebody like him and a lot of the people, frankly, that I've had on the podcast and you, is that this is an oral history, but your caving life is far from over, as is his, you know? So it's like to talk to somebody, like there are a lot of people who I've reached out to who are like, yeah, I'd like to do it, but I want to get through this project first so I can tell you about that. And I was like, well, there's always going to be another project, man.
Wow. There's so many caves that have yet to be discovered.
Yeah, exactly.
Sierra Mazateca is such a rugged place. You're never going to get to all these places and find all the caves.
Oh, I know. Like, that's what, when he and his crew give grotto presentations for us, and, you know, I'm like, man, you guys have got to go through a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of bushwhacking, a lot of really rugged jungle camps to just get to these places. And you did some of that.
Oh, yeah, a little bit. We we were kind of pampered on this trip, or lucky, if you want to call it that. It was just a few-hour hike from the road to get to the camp, and a little taste of the jungle. It wasn't anything crazy. We had a very fortunate camp in a grass pasture, so it wasn't really all that bad. But I had some instances where I was like, "Oh yeah, this is the jungle." Yeah, so Mexico was really good. Jessica Van Orden and Mark Dickey came down there with me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we were invited down. I was like, "Oh, we got this cave. We could use some extra rope skills on there." I was like, "Oh, okay, we'll come on out." Apparently, they've been working on this cave project for the last like 6 or 7 years, and they've yet to drop this pit, right? And they've been throwing rocks down this hole. The pit, it's not a surface pit; it's actually in the cave. They've been throwing rocks down this hole, and they were counting like 11-second drop on these rocks.
Oh my god, that's a big drop.
What is this? And I was like, the so and so group has been working on it for like all these years, and they've yet to get down. I was like, what's going on? One of the original project managers came forward to us, and he's like, "Oh, well, I want to get down this thing. We're going to need more like rope tech kind of work stuff." And I was like, "All right, well, we'll come down, check it out, see what you guys got." And we got a film crew too, kind of thing down there, because it was a whole film project too. This is gonna be a movie. Yeah. So the original project manager came forward, was like, "You got to come, to this cave." So we went down there and did it. We get down there, and the top 40 meters of this cave was all really, really nasty rock. It was all mud encased rock that was just falling apart every time you touch it. So we really couldn't just rig it IRT style. It was way too dangerous, especially since we're getting other people working down there doing survey work and things. So we're looking at it, and it was like, "All right, well, let's try this and that and that." Eventually, what we came up with after about a few days of rigging, we put basically the gauntlet ropes course inside the cave. Yeah, it had everything. We started, we did traverses and bay hangs and rebelays, and we had a deviation to a guided rappel. All of this stuff that was alpine rigging, because we didn't want any cavers going down through this section of rock to not touch rock.
So
the whole
yeah.
time you're on this section of rope, you never touch any walls or ceilings or floors.
Mm. So there's kind of a conservation element to doing it the alpine style too.
Yeah, I guess you can. Mostly we did on safety. Like, if you dislodge a soccer ball sized rock, or even a golf ball sized rock up there, and it falls down, several hundred meters on to hit somebody, like that's probably not going to end up well.
No, not at all.
So we felt a lot safer rigging it that way, and then eventually we got down to good rock, and we were able to actually rig it normally with rebelays and stuff. Yeah, all good fun there. But we eventually did make it down.
And I mean, you're in the jungle, and there are jungle hazards.
Oh, definitely.
Right?
Oh, there's snakes and spiders and banditos and stuff. And
yeah.
I had a spider in my tent. It was a wandering spider, like a little tarantula thing. I say little, but
little tarantula.
Yeah. I get that. I'm out there. I showered in the rain, right? That's what you do in the jungle. And I get in my tent. I'm still naked, and I'm trying to dry off. I'm kneeling down. And I got my head towards the ceiling, and I look over to my right next to my face. And there's this spider that's, if you outstretch your palm with your fingers out, it's probably almost as big as where the legs are, where your fingers come out.
Oh my God.
And I'm sitting there clung to the ceiling of my tent. I'm like, no, this is not okay. I'm not okay with this.
It was inside the tent. It was not outside the tent.
I don't know how he got in there. They are fast little critters.
Oh God.
I mean, there's cockroaches and other stuff in the tent. I didn't really care about that, but this giant spider had to go. So I was very vocal in my activities in the tent, and everyone in camp heard it. Yeah. Somehow I used Ziploc bags and other shirts and the hat, and I was able to catch the thing and get it outside safely.
Wow.
No harm was done to him or me, so.
Well, okay. Do you know anything about that spider? Like, could it have harmed you?
I don't think they're deadly, no, but it causes some side effects that are not pleasant.
And you don't know from firsthand experience, though, do you?
Nope, I don't want to know.
Oh, okay, so you weren't bit, I guess, as it were.
No, I did really well. I came back out with no injuries on that trip. It was great.
Well, good on you for not killing it. I'm glad to hear that.
The spiders have their place. I don't want to harm those spiders.
Exactly.
It was funny. The locals want to, they see a snake, they're like, "Oh, we have to kill the snake." It's like, "Oh, don't kill the snake. The snakes are nice, but they're bad for them. They go after the kids and their livestock and stuff."
Yeah.
You understand that, I guess.
So what's coming? Like, what's on your list of things to do next?
Oh, all kinds of good stuff. We got a whole season of the Gauntlet. Definitely Mars coming up, or we'll be there in Pennsylvania. We're going to be at Spelunfest in Kentucky, which is really cool. Probably Cave Capers again.
Oh, that'd be great.
Dagfall Caven.
Man, we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and we hope to get there and set up cool courses. You know, we are a course. We're not really a teaching entity, but it is nice to help cavers with certain skill sets and stuff. You know, we're really safe with stuff. We have every one of our riggers is trained in SRT. We always promote rappel tests, safe attachment points, things like that. And the ropes course we do is pretty safe. I mean, it's all alpine rig, so like if anytime you're on rope and you go out of control rappel, like you're gonna end up in a rebelay or something. Yeah, it's all good fun. It's a safe environment for everybody. Come and learn some stuff.
If a grotto wants to have the gauntlet at their event or at an event of some kind, what do they have to do? Do they have to just reach out? Is there like a suggested donation or something like that toward the project or what?
So the best place to contact us is probably our email, which is very simple. It's gauntletsrt@gmail.com.
Okay.
You contact us there. We can get back to you anywhere else. We also have an Instagram and a Facebook. You find us on there. Just search for us. We did start doing a kind of fun. Well, we put out a donation jar at a lot of the events, and people started putting money in. I was like, oh, wow, we can like pay for stuff now. It's cool. We don't have to use our own personal.
Well, and you deserve to have a little cash come your way for doing all this work to set it up and teach these people. You know, I mean, yeah, if people are able, definitely drop some money in there. How has that evolved?
No, that's been doing great. One of the other members, Emily Hannigan, decided, oh, everyone doesn't want to put money in a donation jar. Well, no one carries cash anymore. I'm like, what do you mean always carries cash? It's like, oh, everyone does the electronic stuff. I was like, okay, this is beyond me. I'm pretty computer illiterate. So she was like, oh, we got to do a GoFundMe. I was like, well, I don't know what that is. Like, what are you? Oh, you put it online. Then people give you money over the internet. That's pretty much more popular. And it was more popular. And we did get some money through the GoFundMe. And that was nice because it got to pay for some other things like the trailer repairs and stuff. And eventually, we hope to get more money and we can start buying gear just for the gauntlet. We don't have to use personal gear like ropes and carabiners. So that's what we're looking forward to at some point.
That's great.
Gear gets damaged. It gets used up and it's all our personal gear. But we also don't want to like charge people, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, but free will donation can sometimes yield even more money than charging people might. And so I'm going to put a link to your GoFundMe. Is it still active?
It is still active, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes of this episode so that people can do that, even if they've not done it before. You know, you'll find that a lot of cavers are pretty generous.
They're a lot more generous than I thought. I was like, wow, this is really good.
So a lot of gauntlet stuff coming up. What about caving? What about exploration of some kind?
Exploration stuff? That always pops up.
I'm sure a few projects you're working on might be a little secretive or something like that, but tell me what you can.
Oh, I hate talking about secret stuff, but I don't like keeping things secret is my big thing.
Yeah, I get that, but I understand why it's necessary for some people.
Yeah, sometimes you just, you know, you got to keep things secret.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of sharing cave data, so.
Well, that's good.
Oh, yeah. I think that, you know, once cavers finish their project and they go, we made a map, da da da. Share the map. Let it out there. Let people have it. You know, you did a lot of work on it. People want to see it.
Yeah, exactly. And why did you do it if not to share it? You know, I mean, I get it. You were the first one there.
They're way too secretive here about their stuff. I'm doing a cave project down in Alabama with Marion Acres, which is really cool stuff. She's working on getting maps done.
Fern Cave, right?
Yeah, Bat Cave.
Well, she talked about it on the podcast, so.
Yeah. I'm doing that, I guess. Stuff up in the Bob Marshall, Montana, with Dustin Kistner. He's doing a bunch of little caves up there. There are caves up in the Rockies. They're there. They're really good caves.
Oh yeah, you got to hike to get to them though.
You gotta work for it. Sometimes you gotta hike 50 miles to get to the good stuff.
Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, we do the Silver Trip Expedition every year.
Yeah, that's way out there in the Bob.
They got Tears of the Turtle up there too.
Yeah, you're not doing that though, are you?
I know better not to do tears.
It's why, what makes you say that? Because it's miserable.
Well, the stories I've heard of here. See, like, I go up to Silvertip and I go up there, and the base camp is nice and flat. They got a couch up there. It's all luxurious, and then they come to tears. It's terrible. I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of nice over here.
I can't believe how much they have to put up with there at tears. But you know what? Those are some real, real hardy explorers.
Kind of happy though. Maybe one day.
What's on your bucket list, I guess, maybe? Like things that you don't have necessarily lined up, but places you'd definitely like to see sometime.
Yeah, I'm always curious about all kinds of things. I'm not going to say no to certain things that come my way. Hint, hint. But my big thing recently, and I think for the future, is kind of training and sharing knowledge. Caving's cool and all, but I kind of found a little niche that I really like helping people.
Well, that's good.
So, you know, yeah, teaching future spar classes, teaching, you know, more caving academy classes we're doing. Obviously, the more gauntlet stuff we do, that's going to be really good for the community at large.
I'm really, really glad to hear about the spar classes, because that's something that when I first heard about them, I thought, well, this is a great idea. I mean, obviously, there's lots of different tiers of training for the rescue world and the NCRC and things like that. You know, you can do the weekend, or you can do the week long, or you can do the spar. You know, the spar, I think, is a great idea. Small party assisted rescue.
That is a great class for just generic cavers to have.
Yeah. Well, that and OCR, orientation to cave rescue, the weekend.
Well, everyone's taking OCR first, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but even if you have no interest in rescue, you're absolutely right. Even if you have no interest in rescue, it makes you a better caver because it gives you a sense of what has to happen if somebody gets hurt. So, in other words, don't get hurt.
Exactly. I took my first OCR class in 2008, and I was like, whoa, we're not far from the entrance, but like, if I got hurt here, I'm going to be hurt a while. I don't want to be that person.
Yeah, exactly. Who wants that to happen to them?
General knowledge for cavers, yes. An OCR will definitely kind of impact how you cave, and I think everyone should take an OCR. But the spar stuff is a whole other level of really good stuff for cavers to know, especially if you're doing vertical stuff.
So I don't know, give me like a sort of in a nutshell on what you are, I guess, teaching for spar, or how you're involved volunteering for spar classes.
So spar has, I think they have several, it's probably less than 10 national instructors that do lead instructing for spar. I am not a lead instructor. I am what you call a regional specialist. Someone who's taken spar, who knows a lot of spar stuff, and who could help teach at the spar. So that's what I've been doing.
What's involved there?
I do love teaching spar. It is so much fun. People absorb so many good things. It is a very intense class. I don't think you can really get it all on a weekend. I don't think you can get it all in 5 days. I think spar should be a whole week-long class, and people will agree with me on that one.
And I mean, spar, I think, is... I don't want to pit the practicality of each level of NCRC against each other, but I, you know, OCR obviously is just the introduction, you know, and the week long is the week long. Spar to me, for a caver who does it a lot, seems like a very, very practical no brainer.
Oh, yeah, well, the spar is way different than regular NCRC level 1, 2, and 3. It's you're taking everything that you know from level 1, 2, and 3 and saying, we don't have 70 people and a whole trailer full of cool gear. We have the 4 people on our cave trip and someone has a spar kit and we need to get somebody out. How can we do this?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying to make it requirements for people. I just wish it was offered more to cavers here. And I think people will take these classes if they were available.
Is there anything you wanted that we haven't hit yet that you want to make sure that we talk about? Did we talk about enough?
I'm homeless. I live in a van and I go around caving. Oh, let me tell you about the van I live in.
Are you in it right now?
Yeah, I'm in a van right now.
Okay.
I'm wearing aviation headsets right now.
Yeah, I know.
These are in the van. They live in the van. Basically, the van is an old converted bread delivery truck.
That's cool. Like,
you know,
like a
UPS truck, you know?
Like a boxy. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, you've probably seen it around at the K events before. But you're driving it, and it's like you're driving in an airplane. You can't hear diddly squat in there with the diesel engine cooking. You
know, man.
So I had an idea when I bought it. I was like, you know, this is loud. I can't hear anything. let's put a really loud sound system in here to drown out the engine noise. And my girlfriend's like, you can't do that. It's going to damage your ears. It's already damaging your ears. I'm like, well, you got a better idea? She's like, do like doing airplanes with the intercom systems. And I was like, okay. And it ended up being like the same price as like some big souped up, you know, subwoofer sound system. So we did that. I don't know. It works. Yeah. People love it.
Absolutely.
You know, we kind of always joked driving around with these on. It's like, guys, it sounds like we're on a podcast. Yeah, it kind of does. So that's the first thing that clicked in my mind. You're like, you got to get a headset. And I was like, oh, these headsets would be good for a podcast.
You going to do one?
Apparently, we're doing right
we're
now.
We're doing one right now.
this counts enough. Yes, I do listen to your podcast on these headphones when I'm driving.
Oh, wonderful. Well, that's cool.
But we're in the van and we just kind of cook around and we can tow the gauntlet behind it and go to different kid events and stuff and set up the hot tub.
The hot tub. Yeah.
The van has a hot tub.
The hot tub. I didn't know if you wanted to get into the hot tub, but yeah, you've got a hot tub.
You go to kid events, you got to have a hot tub, you know?
Well, do you?
Yeah, some kid events you go to, there's not a hot tub. So you know what? We put a hot tub in the van. Like, the van has an onboard boiler that heats up all the other stuff in the van. It's like, oh, we can convert that and use that for a hot tub. Yeah, we show up at an event. We blow up the kiddie pool. We drop some hoses in it, turn it on, and you got a hot tub.
Oh, my goodness. You're living the dream. In many ways, you are living the dream.
Yeah, it was one time I was living out in the Pacific Northwest with the van. I was like, oh, Kevin, you got to come to OTR. I'm like, oh, I'm all out here with the van. We'll just drive to OTR. And I was like, all right, I'll drive to OTR. So I spent, you know, a week driving from Washington State to West Virginia.
My God.
And I get to Missouri, and I get a phone call. This is 2021. I think you know where I'm going with this. I get a phone call. Oh, Kevin. Yeah. You got to turn around. OTR has been canceled. I was like, what? Come on.
Daggone it.
I'm already halfway there. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to go back. All my friends are supposed to come visit me and stuff. And I was like, well, see West Virginia. We can go to Seneca Rocks. We'll go rock climbing or something. We won't go caving.
There you go.
We went rock climbing on Seneca Rocks, and we're doing some multi-pitch stuff. I'm there with Jessica Van Ord and some other people, and we're at the top of this second pitch, and she looks around the corner, and she's like, Bill? And I look around the corner, too. I'm like, Bill Stone?
Oh, my God.
Bill Stone was there, yeah.
He came out too, and he was like, "Well, if it's canceled, I'm just gonna go do what you guys were doing."
Rock climbing, so I'm like, "Yeah, we ran into Bill Stone."
Wow,
happened, you know, we don't expect it.
Wow,
she knows Bill from all her Chevy stuff she's done.
Well, yeah, of course, but that's still cool to run into to him.
Yeah,
Kevin, this has been a joy. I thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for the gauntlet. Thanks for bringing it to Capers. And I hope you're coming out again this year. And if you, the listener, get a chance to run the gauntlet or even to just see it, like I didn't get to do any of it, but just to watch you put it together and watch people on it, it was just cool. It's a great idea. And I thank you for doing it. And I know that more is coming in your caving life. And I'm really happy about that.
We'll see. Come run the gauntlet sometime.
Stay warm in that van, man.
Will do.
Oh, that was so cool. I like the sound of that aviation headset, Kevin. Really appreciated Kevin's time. And I want to let you know that next month, man, this was a really cool talk that I had with Sean Williams, Missouri caver Sean Williams, and I can't wait for you to hear that on May 1st. I really hope you have a good April. Thank you for listening. You can support the podcast by supporting our sponsor, Sophie Reaptress, sophiereaptress.com, or click the link in the episode description. Past sponsors as well, Swago, swagogear.com, Organic Robot Designs in Greenfield, Indiana. You need a t-shirt? T-shirts be a good way to raise money for your grotto. He'll make them for you. Charlie's a former chairman of my grotto, Central Indiana Grotto. And, of course, El Spelio, which is now being sold by On Rope One. All right, cool. Careful out there in the spring. Check the weather. All right? Until next time, kill nothing but time.